the 19th one. May I lead all sentient beings to the higher form of life. This is the practice of the Bodhisattva when going uphill. And so we've been talking about higher forms of life and precious human life and so on. And so, you know, we try. The most important thing we need to do is, even if we aim for liberation and enlightenment, is to get a precious human life. Because if we aim for enlightenment, but we don't have a precious human life or rebirth in the Pure Land next life, then, you know, forget about helping sentient beings, forget about practicing the path, we can't even help ourselves, okay? And so, while we have the far-reaching aims for definite goodness, which means liberation and enlightenment, we also have the aim for precious human life. But that aim for the precious human life isn't our final goal. It's just a provisional thing so that we'll have the opportunity to practice in future lives to fulfill the long-term goals of liberation and enlightenment. So in the Bodhisattva practices, they talk about how a Bodhisattva practices the six, does the six far-reaching practices for both the purpose of full enlightenment and, because they want to attain full enlightenment, completes them so that they can have a precious human life to continue to practice. So, for example, to receive a human body and a human mind, then they the Bodhisattvas practice ethical conduct, because that's the main cause for receiving an upper rebirth. But then just having a human body and human mind isn't enough. Then you also need resources if you're going to practice, because if you're totally poor, then you can't practice yourself and you have nothing to be able to give to others. And so they practice generosity in this life in order to have resources in their future lives as Bodhisattvas. Okay. But then if you're a Bodhisattva and you have the precious human life and you have resources, if you have a very unappealing look, then it's going to be hard to meet people, so it'll be hard to meet teachers, and even if you want to benefit people, if your appearance is very kind of disgusting and ugly, they won't want to come near. So you practice patience in this life, because patience creates the cause to have a pleasant appearance in future lives. You can see that. It's very direct, isn't it? Because when we're angry in this life, we don't have a very nice look. Yeah, when we practice patience, our appearance, even this life, becomes nicer. So, of course, future lives, by abandoning anger, we're going to create the karma for a pleasant appearance. Okay? But even if we have that, if we have the inability to complete what we start out to do, then, you know, having a good human life and pleasant appearance and resources goes to waste. So we practice joyous effort in this life so that we'll have the ability to complete projects in future lives. Okay? Because joyous effort helps us complete what we set out to do in this life. So any kind of practice we undertake or study or retreat, we're able to complete it this life. That sets the habit in the mind to be able to complete it in future lives. Okay? Then, in future lives, we also need the ability to focus. If our mind's all over the place, it becomes difficult to study, it becomes difficult to meditate. So we practice meditative stabilization, the fifth far-reaching practice, this life, to develop more ability to concentrate, you know, and to hold the objects of meditation, especially to hold the bodhicitta, the wisdom realizing emptiness, in future lives. So, you know, we develop this life, it carries over to future life. And then, of course, we develop the far-reaching wisdom. Yeah, we especially want to have that in future lives, because having that is what's going to enable us to really break free from samsara and have all the tools of an omniscient being to be able to help all sentient beings. So to create that ability in future life, then we practice far-reaching wisdom in this life. And it works in a few areas, because by practicing wisdom this life, then we're in future lives, we're able to distinguish what is correct teaching and what is incorrect teaching, what is a fully qualified spiritual master and what isn't. And so that's really important to be able to discriminate in future lives. Otherwise we meet, you know, kind of Bobby the Bozo, who's the spiritual mentor, and, you know, and we follow him like people follow Jim Jones, and that's really dangerous. So we need to practice wisdom this life to have the ability in future lives to discriminate what to practice and what to avoid, what teacher to follow, what teacher not to follow. Okay? And then also by practicing the teachings on wisdom this life, then in future lives, we have more familiarity with them. And so they say that, you know, when somebody who's a fully ripened vessel for the teachings on wisdom, when they come in and they hear a teaching on the emptiness of true existence, then, you know, they start weeping and the hairs of their body stand on end, and, you know, and that's because they practiced in the previous lives. Yeah, and so, you know, how do we practice in this life? Well, we listen to teachings, we try and get it, put as many imprints of understanding, you know, the teachings on emptiness as we can, and then slowly, slowly, we become a more and more receptive vehicle as we go through these different lives. But just because you cry in teachings and your hair stands on end doesn't mean that you're necessarily the perfect vessel, because my hair is standing on end right now because I'm cold. So, you know, we have to really actually have the wisdom inside to become the suitable, you know, the perfectly suitable vessel for understanding those teachings. Okay? So that's how we practice now in order to receive a really beneficial, precious human life or rebirth in the dear lives in the future life, you know, to be able to practice towards enlightenment. And then knowing all of this is also how we encourage and how we lead other sentient beings by teaching them the same kind of thing, how we lead them to higher forms of